south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Let's talk about something that seems mundane, but for gringos and expats has practical applications. Since most of you, or 80% of you anyway, down here in Latin America, who will have a plan B, you'll also have a car, or two or three. That means once in a while you'll have to have the thing washed, right? Oh, and by the way, down here in Latin America, even guys and gals who own the shittiest of wrecks, you know, rusted out pieces of garbage that the cops would pull you over for if you're up in the States. Well, down here, even people who have absolute shitboxes wash them once in a while. They wash the exterior of the car anyway. Tell you the truth, I've been in cars and Ubers that, I swear to you, have never seen a cleaning on the inside. Some of them smell so bad, like repeated spill after spill of Cokes and soft drinks and juices, melted ice cream, sweat, you name it. In fact, I've been in cars when I looked in the back seat, there were seedlings sprouting out of the floor. I'm not just talking about Latinos who own those kind of cars either. There are some gringos who go native. Their cars and their living quarters look like that. Anyway, when it comes to getting a car wash, well, you know, there's three or four ways you could have that done. You could either do it yourself like a lot of Americans do. You know, some American guys and gals even like to do that. Well, I don't. For some Americans, it's a personal thing. They don't like other people touching or getting in their cars. I know a few gringos who have a lot of money won't even use valet parking because they don't want a stranger in the front seat or anyone else they don't know driving their car. But back to that necessary exercise known as a car wash. Of course, some Americans do it themselves because it's too expensive to get it done, you know, professionally. But can you really call that a profession? So what do you do for a living, Johnny? Well, I'm a certified registered car wash specialist, a professional. In fact, I'm the car washingest motherfucker you ever met. Real chick magnet kind of career, huh? What do you do for a living? In fact, I just looked it up. The average car wash in the States, if you go to one of those do-it-yourself car washes, you know, you put coins in the machine or tokens, and you get so many minutes with a do-it-yourself power sprayer, that costs, on average, around $10. The fact is, many years ago when I lived in the States, they had those things, and I even hated using those. You always ended up getting a soaker in half the year, and I lived in Chicago. The weather was very cold, and let's face it, getting wet outside in Chicago was not fun. Or being outside and getting wet anywhere up north was not something you look forward to. By the way, down here in Latin America, I've never seen one of those self-serve car washes where you stick coins or tokens in. Though they probably exist somewhere, I've never seen one. So you can rule out trying to wash your car that way. By the way, I learned a long time ago, it's not worth washing your car yourself. It's so cheap to get it done down here, you wouldn't believe it. So why go through the hassle? Another way to get your car washed down here is to ask your maintenance guy or gardener to wash it for you. You know, for a long, long time, I had a maintenance guy come to my house, like a regular working guy, every day. And I made that part of his job, to wash my car at least once a week. Actually, I had two cars, or sometimes even three, and I made him wash all three once a week. Tell you the truth, he actually loved doing it. But most gringos and expats will end up living in an apartment or townhouse, at least for a while, and therefore no maintenance guy or gardener, so you can rule that out. Another way to get your car washed is just go shopping. When you park your car, whether it's on the street or in a parking lot, most often some little guy will come up to you, it's always a little guy, with a bucket and some dirty towels, and he'll offer to wash your car while you're in the supermarket. Exterior only, of course. They almost never offer to clean the inside, and I wouldn't let him in anyway. Guy right off the street just walking around with a bucket? You're going to leave your car doors open for that guy and go shopping? No way. Anyway, like I said, those guys are everywhere, on and off the gringo tourist trail. And sometimes it'll be that guy who is unofficially going to watch your car. You know, you park on the street and some guy will come up to you and say, "Watch your car, buddy. $2." I know. It's totally unsanctioned and basically illegal to do that. But those guys are everywhere and the cops almost never seem to do anything about it. So when you're parking on the street, and a lot of times it's safe to park on the street if you're close to a shopping center or whatever. Anyway, the guy asking to watch your car will be in your face before you even open the door. Now, you don't have to give him the usual $2 that they generally ask. You can give him 50 cents. What's he going to do about it? And of course, never pay him in advance. Only when you come back to your car and you're going to leave. The thing is, though, if he's the same guy that's going to wash your car, then you don't have to give him the $2 or 50 cents at all. You're just going to pay him for the wash and it'll cover everything. Oh, and by the way, there are safe places to park your car on the street if you're just going shopping or in a place for an hour or so. Though, if you do have a nice car, it's always better to park in a guarded parking lot. The thing is, if you have a really nice car and it doesn't fit the neighborhood, there's a lot of temptation there. Oh, and that reminds me, here's another little tip. If you're parking in the big city or even the small city and there's lots of traffic around, pretty busy, whether on the street or in a parking lot, remember, there's that personal space issue with Latin Americans. You know, you and I, we like to be at least 18 inches or maybe even 2 feet away from anyone who's walking next to us or standing in line. Well, for Latin Americans, they could be right up next to you, right on top of you, and it wouldn't matter to them. To us, it's an invasion of personal space, but to them, it's pretty much normal. Same thing goes for parking a car. Sometimes you'll park in a wide open space, come back after some shopping, and see that you're jammed in, 2 inches away from a junk on either side of you. Though, if the guy next to you has a nicer car, maybe it's 3 or 4 inches away. I'll tell you, many times I've been in a parking lot where I couldn't get in or out of my own door because the guy parked so close to me. It was impossible, so you have to shimmy across and go out the passenger side. And no, I'm not U.S. grade A fat. I have not an ounce of extra fat on me. I'm exactly the right weight for my height. 6 foot, about 170 pounds. Sometimes, you know, I think, I can hardly imagine the problems a fat person or a big-bellied person might have getting in and out of a car down here in one of those tight parking spaces. That said, now I know why car manufacturers, just a few years ago anyway, developed push-button retracting side-view mirrors. They must have had Latin American drivers and parking lots in mind. Though some cars, cheap cars and older cars, don't have them. The tip to remember here is, when you park your car, retract those side view mirrors. Suck them in or risk having them scratched or lopped off. Now I ask you, how many times has that happened to you up in Cleveland? Probably never, right? I bet you'd never had a side mirror lopped off in a parking lot or in traffic. Well, down here, you see damaged and missing side view mirrors all the time. Hell, more than a handful of times, I've been sitting stationary at a stoplight or a stop sign when one of those human cockroach, rice-burning motorcycle guys whipped alongside of me and scratched or dislodged the side-view mirror. And then they're out in front of you running a red light, and you're fuming. Nothing to do but reach in the glove compartment for that gun you're glad is not there. I mean, really, if they'll get so close as to snap your mirror when you're sitting right there in the driver's seat, a foot away from them, imagine the care and precautions they'll take when you're not in the car and parked on the street. Yeah, right. You longtime listeners might remember the story I told way back when I returned to my car, which was parked on the street. And I saw this indigenous lady changing her kid's diaper on the hood of my car. And when I walked up to her, made a sour face and crossed my arms like I was pretty annoyed, she gave me a look that kind of said, "Give me a minute, bud. Can't you see I've got a job to do?" By the way, car wash prices down here in Latin America vary dramatically, depending if you're on or off the Gringo tourist trail. Oh, and the price bid, the opening offer will vary quite a bit too, depending if you're a Gringo or a local. For example, you park your car in the street or in a parking lot. A little guy with a bucket comes over and says, "Car wash?" Now, the guy might only know 10 words of English, but he'll know that phrase, car wash. Anyway, he'll see you're a Gringo and you'll say, "¿Cuánto cuesta?" How much does it cost? And he might say $5 in the equivalent funny money, which, by the way, is a pretty good deal judged by the fact that I just looked up what the price of a car wash in the States is. A hand car wash, exterior only, from $10 to $25. So if the little guy says $5, that's a pretty good deal. The thing is, though, if you were a local, he probably would have said $2 or $3. So if you're a seasoned Gringo or just happen to like bargaining, you could say $2 and end up settling at $2.50 or $3. And usually, if you hold your price at $2 or $3, and they say, "No way," most times when you start walking to your destination, they'll say, "All right." Now, those little guys on the street or in a parking lot with a bucket, they do a pretty good job considering the water that they've got in that bucket has probably cleaned 3 or 4 cars before you, which doesn't sound too appealing, does it? In a way, it's like taking a bath in someone else's bathwater. Not a pleasant thought, but it gets the job done. Because you've got to remember, most of these little guys on the street, don't have a consistent water supply. I mean, they're just walking around washing cars, right? And they get the water where they can, from a tap sticking out of the wall of a building or a local car check, somebody's sprinkler system. Nevertheless, somehow they get the job done. Now, as for me, sometimes I use those guys on the street, but most often I go to a regular standalone car wash business. You drive up, there are five or six little guys there with rags and buckets. There's usually a little place you could sit with a couple of tables where you could have a cup of coffee, a beer, and some junk food. I'll take a coffee, black, no sugar, hold the beer and the junk food. Thank you very much. And man, I'll tell you, those guys really know how to clean a car inside and out. And even if they got two or three guys working on your car, it could take an entire hour for them to get it spick and span, and they do a job. And generally, that'll cost you between $8 and $10. In the States, that'd cost you $25 or $30 for sure. Because remember, they're doing the interior too. Oh, and they will try to upsell you, usually for around $25. They'll shampoo your seats and steam clean your motor. For $25 down here, they'll do a detailed job that would cost you $100 or more in the States. But there'll be no dickering with these guys because it's a standard car wash operation, you know, a legit business, and they've got posted prices. But man, I'll tell you, to get the standard wash on the outside and the inside cleaned up, it's worth double or triple what you pay. Oh, and by the way, you might be wondering how they could sell beer at a car wash. Well, not a problem. You don't need a liquor license down here to sell beer or even regular booze, unless it's an actual bar, restaurant, or disco. Another thing you gotta love about Latin America. By the way, not so long ago, I went to one of those regular registered car washes. And man, the owner was cleaning up. It was an hour wait to get your car washed because the owner had a special gimmick going. Talk about the gringo advantage in business, or let's say first world advantage. You've probably heard me say, when you come down here and you're looking for a business idea, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. You just take a wheel that's going kind of slow and rusty, then polish it up and spin it faster. You know, people like to get their car washed at any particular time, but when they've got their family or kids with them, that complicates things. What do you do with your kids at the car wash? They just get into trouble or get bored, whatever. Well, it turns out the owner of this car wash, he had a section roped off with five different batting cages in it. I'd never seen anything like it before. Obviously, he bought these things and had them professionally installed. You put 50 cents in the slot and you get 10 balls. And where you put your money in, you pick the velocity you want the ball thrown at you. So I was sitting there watching those guys in the batting cages. Pretty amusing, actually. I noticed most of the kids set the velocity way too fast and couldn't hit a thing. The first 10 balls would whip by. They didn't even crack a foul ball. Then it was back to Daddy, who was sitting at a table sucking up a beer, to hit up for more change. Then, with the second round, the kids learned their lesson, dropped the velocity down, and could actually hit a few balls. Man, I'll tell you, on a weekend, I bet that guy makes more money on the batting cages than he does on the car wash. You could see the kids just loved it. When I was getting my car washed, sitting around with a coffee for about an hour, I watched no less than five different kids harass their parents for more coins. I thought, man, that's a great idea. Pretty ingenious. Turns out the owner of the place was not a Latin American at all. Was a European who came over some years back, half German, half Italian. Married a local Latina girl. Started a car wash, knew he had competition, so he put that little twist on it. That batting cage thing. He had the machines imported from the States, said it cost him around $20,000 to buy and install the machines. He said they paid for themselves in the first year. Just goes to show, huh? First world ingenuity. In that case, first world European ingenuity. Don't sell those Europeans short. Think of Ferrari, Mercedes, Range Rover, Audi, MG, Airbus, and all those Nokia phones. Remember those coming out of Scandinavia? Anyway, what I'm saying is it took a foreigner, a European, to get creative in the mundane world of the car wash business here. So anyway, as mentioned, there are various ways to get your car washed down here. And the last way is one of those automatic car washes. You know, they're usually set up at gas stations, and the car is never touched by human hands. A conveyor belt takes your car through an automated car wash chamber, etc. Well, you know, there's not a lot of automatic car washes like that here, but you see them once in a while, integrated mostly with Shell or Texaco stations. I sort of figured out why. It's that maintenance thing again, or lack of maintenance here in Latin America. With those automatic car washes, a lot can go wrong. You've got nozzles, compressors, water tanks, pumps, giant brushes and gears and timers. Exactly the kind of stuff that needs a lot of regular maintenance. That's why when you see those things, they're almost always attached or part of a first world gas station setup like a Shell, Texaco, Chevron, Esso. You just don't see them as standalone operations in a parking lot or a field somewhere. In fact, in all the time I've been down here, I used one of those things only once. I think it was $5 or $6, but they only do the exterior, right? In the end, I wasn't impressed. All right, moving on to something completely different. I want all you idiot American do-gooders and $5 tippers on vacation in Latin America to pay attention to this. Now, you longtime listeners have heard me say this over and over again, maybe to the point of exhaustion. Don't give your dough to organized charities. Just don't do it. I know, it's a hard thing not to do, especially if your church or school group or coffee clutch group or golf club has a favorite charity or two, because they will come around knocking. There'll be a lot of peer pressure, too, to give your fair share, usually right around Christmas. How often do you get hit up, and do you cave? Well, for all you guys and gals who just can't get it out of your system, you get sucked in every year. I'm going to do you a little favor. I got a free book for you. Actually, it's not free. I bought it. But you send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send you a copy. E-book copy, that is. It's a great and interesting read called Toxic Charity. It's the book charities don't want you to read. The bestseller you'd never heard of. And for a reason. Like that book you probably have read, or maybe not. And I'll give you that one if you want it too. The Real Dr. Anthony Fauci by Robert Kennedy Jr. Another absolutely spot-on book, impeccably footnote and ibbited. 1,000 references. And I mean it, 1,000 references. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send you that one, too. That Fauci book, like the book Toxic Charity, a huge bestseller that never gets mentioned on the New York Times bestseller list, or in the lamestream media bestseller list, for that matter. Both of those books beat the pants out of regular top 10 bestsellers, but they're not mentioned anywhere. Conspicuously obvious. The lamestream media just does not want you to know about them. Makes you sick, doesn't it? Well, I guess it's like expat Eddie says. Why is it that stupidity is self-replicating, like the COVIDiot virus, but smart isn't? Getting back to this gringos and their charity thing. You know, a gringo pastime, on the tourist trail especially, is to help those poor locals they see sort of just scraping by. Nothing wrong with that. That's my motto. Help the locals, the individuals. But isn't it funny, the more you get on the gringo tourist trail, the more those locals kind of show up en masse, often with a couple of tiny kids. If you give a couple of bucks to one of those ladies, suddenly a gaggle of them are following you around. That's what you see on the gringo tourist trail, but funny enough, you don't see it off the tourist trail. Why is that? Something strange about that, don't you think? Still, if you give to a local lady dragging a couple of scruffy kids behind her, it's infinitely better than giving to an organized charity. Because the fact is, organized charities are organized so that the organizers get a whole hell of a lot more out of it than the poor folks they're purportedly trying to help. The thing is, and you probably know this already, Americans are the most giving people in the world. Look it up. Other countries and other cultures don't even come close. Even do-gooders in other first world countries, like European countries or Japan or Australia and New Zealand, Canada, they don't even come close to the amount gringos give to charity per capita. The fact is, you ask any gringo or tourist, ask them, what's your favorite charity? They won't even have to think twice. They'll name one, two, or even a half dozen. United Way, Salvation Army, Jerry's Kids. Or have they changed it? Is it Jerry's people or persons? Who knows? The world has certainly gone nuts. Yep, the fact is, every tourist trail do-gooder gringo has a pet local charity that does about zero good for those it purports to serve. But it sure does make the giver feel good, at least for a little while. While we're on the topic, I want to read a little excerpt from this book so you can get an idea what you're in for, if and when you read it, and I hope you do. By the way, it was written by a guy who was ass deep in the do-gooder charity business, a guy who saw so much of what really was happening, he just couldn't take it anymore, and he had to write a tell-all. And man, does he blow the lid off the organized charity business. Even the small organized charities that don't have the money or the means to do big marketing on TV or on billboards. He shows in how many different ways those organizations are corrupt too. That is, if your definition of corrupt is they take about 80% of what they get and distribute it as perks and salaries amongst the organizers and the board members. So then, is that really corrupt when 20% or less of the dough that's donated gets to the actual charity recipients? Is that your definition of corrupt? It sure fits mine. So anyway, let me read a couple of selections from this book. How about this? As we do-gooders converge on inner city neighborhoods to plant flowers and pick up trash, we bruise the pride of the residents who have the capacity and responsibility to beautify their own environments. We do-gooders fly off on mission trips to poverty-stricken villages, hearts full of pity and suitcases bulging with giveaway goods. Trips that one Nicaraguan leader describes as effective only in, quote, turning my people into perpetual beggars, unquote. The author goes on to say, giving to those in need what they could be gaining from their own initiative may well be the kindest way to slowly destroy people. He says, local entrepreneurship declines as dollars and free resources flood in from the outside. People become conditioned to waiting for the next mission group to arrive instead of building their businesses and societies through their own efforts. He says, all of us do-gooders who have served among the poor for any length of time will recognize the following progression of events. Number one, give once and you elicit appreciation. Number two, give twice and you create anticipation. Number three, give three times and you create expectation. Number four, give free things four times and it becomes entitlement. Number five, give free things five times and you establish dependency. Then he says, after analyzing the problem thoroughly, I've developed an oath for compassionate service. It goes like this. Number one, never do for the poor what they have or could have the capacity to do for themselves. Number two, limit one-way giving to only emergency situations, like, for example, hurricanes or natural disasters. Number three, empower the poor through employment, lending, and investing. Don't use free money and grants. Always tie what you do for the locals to some meaningful work or service. Number four, listen and observe closely to those you seek to help, especially to what is not being said by them. Unspoken feelings may contain essential clues to effectively serve them. Number five, above all, do no harm. By the way, in this book, he's got a whole chapter of what he calls examples of do-gooder stupidity. Let me read just a couple of these. Number one, expenditures for a week of service by church and college groups are grossly out of proportion to what is actually accomplished. For example, U.S. mission teams who rushed into Honduras to help rebuild homes destroyed by Hurricane Mitch spent on average $30,000 per new home. It was later determined that the same homes could have been built by the locals for $3,000 each. In other words, the do-gooders spent 10 times the amount on each home than the locals would have spent had they done it themselves. Example number two, the money spent by one campus ministry to cover the cost of their Central American mission trip just to repaint an orphanage would have been sufficient to hire two local painters and two new full-time teachers and purchase new uniforms and desks for every student in the school. All for the cost of a mission trip to just repaint an orphanage. Do-gooder stupidity example number three. In a certain Honduran village, women had to carry water from a supply source miles away. They spent hours each day on the road getting water. A do-gooder church group came down, drilled a well, and installed a pump. There were cheers and hugs of joy and many gracias, señores. Then the do-gooders went back home. The following year, the church's returning missionaries rumbled up to the village and observed the women carrying water jugs to the river again. Turns out, months earlier, the pump had broken down. The missionaries repaired the pump and things were good again. They came back a year later. Same thing. Once again, the women were carrying jugs to the river. The locals didn't take up a little collection to do the minimal maintenance necessary. They just waited for the do-gooders to return to fix their well. Though perhaps the greatest act of do-gooder gringo stupidity ever recorded happened in Haiti after the two most recent hurricanes and devastating earthquakes. $100 billion, with a B, in foreign aid flowed into Haiti, yet the country ended up 25% poorer than before the aid packages arrived. And of course, we all know by now, or should know by now, what happened with the earthquakes in Haiti and the criminal Clinton Foundation. But, you know, do-gooderism, is that a word? Is big business. According to a Princeton University study, they found that 2.6 million American church members took mission trips abroad in 2015, an average of 8 days long each, at a cost of $4.4 billion, with a B. It's even got a name. It's called religious tourism. It's a huge growth industry. If you check the web, you'll find it's full of religious tourism agencies, denominational, parachurch, college, and service organizations ready to connect you or your group on a third world mission for a fee that you pay. So you can have a meaningful and fruitful experience in an exotic location just ripe with human need. It's amazingly lucrative. For example, in the Bahamas, it's estimated there's one church missionary mission per year for every 15 residents, yet the people remain stubbornly poor. How's that happen? So, contrary to popular belief, most mission trips and service projects do not empower those being served, nor engender healthy cross-cultural relationships, nor improve local quality of life, nor relieve poverty, nor change the lives of the participants. However, most mission trips do weaken those being served, foster dishonest relationships, erode the recipient's work ethic, and deepen dependency. So then what about helping street people? Well, there's simply no way to tell by looking at a street person whether a sob story is legit or if a person will spend that money on drugs or alcohol. But us gringos on vacation with a pocket full of money feel guilty when we turn away beggars. So what do you do? Well, as for me, Johnny, being from Chicago, I've seen my share of street beggars. Sometimes the same people over and over for years and years. You know, the truth is, giving cash to a beggar is the least helpful of all. Don't be fooled. They know their market. All they have to do is portray desperation, and we gringos instinctively dig into our pockets. But if they're too wretched, they gross us out and we'll be repelled. You know, maybe walk to the other side of the street. So there is a method to successful begging. And having a kid or a dog in tow is even better. Tell you what, in another life, if the dice had rolled a different way, I'd have been good at it. How about you?
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.